The UK Investor Magazine podcast is brought to you in association with Oanda, the broker of choice for traders who want a smarter way to trade. Trade with Oanda and get 1 year's subscription to TradingView Pro. 76.6% of retail investor accounts lose money when trading CFDs with this provider. You should consider whether you understand how CFDs work and whether you can afford to take the high risk of losing your money.
Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into a number of UK equities, as well as covering the key themes out there in markets this week. And to do that, we're very kindly joined once more by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Hello, John. Good to be back.
So we're recording on a Friday this week as opposed to a Wednesday. So we're going to have a bit of a wrap up of the week and look at some of the key stories out there and a number of equities that have been moving. So, Alan, to start with, I think from a UK perspective, the biggest news that we had this week was the Bank of England increasing rates by 25 basis points to 4.5% as expected. There were some very interesting revisions to their forecasts for the UK economy. If we go back to the end of last year, they were expecting and forecasting a prolonged recession, albeit quite shallow, but they expected, I think, it to go on for many, many months. But yesterday, they came out and said they've now revised those to the upside and they're going to be looking at 0.25% growth for 2023 for the UK economy. And we will indeed avoid a recession. But what is quite interesting, if we look at the market's reaction to the release yesterday, that they have increased, if you're looking at interest rate futures, increased the terminal rate for UK interest rates this year to about 4.8%. So that would suggest that the markets are expecting further increases in interest rates. But of course, if you're looking at equity markets, Alan, what people are looking for here and really hoping for is the eventual reduction in rates. So I think the big question is here, and I'd like to get your views on this, is do we have to see some fallout in the underlying economy and do we have to see some volatility in markets before the Bank of England decides to cut rates?
Yeah, I think we're at now, John. Of course, when the forecast for interest rate rises were made by the Bank of England governor last year, he forecast them rising to where they are now, which of course is 4.5%. So I think overall, the Bank of England have been pretty proactive. And also, you know, we could say the Fed has been proactive and, you know, perhaps also protectionist at the same time, which is quite normal with the US Fed. But certainly the Bank of England have been proactive in dealing with these issues firmly. Of course, it's been pain for borrowers and those with mortgages, because those that aren't on fixed rates have seen the mortgage rates go up month by month, and it's been quite an increase. So, you know, if we've seen in some, if you're borrowing on a standard variable rate, of course, you will have seen since this time last year your mortgage payments in some cases quadruple. So it's certainly been a painful process, but nothing that the Bank of England didn't predict. So we're now at that point, and I think the economists are now expecting that after the forecast, as you rightly said, of a recession, we'll no longer be seeing a recession. We'll see, in fact, a small improvement in GDP, 0.25%, which is great news. At the same time, of course, you know, the hope is that we are seeing interest rates plateau at the moment. There may be further rises to come. Of course, that will depend on how inflation continues. And of course, we're seeing inflation feed through into so many other areas now. You know, just costs per se across the board have risen. And that those rises in themselves fuel price increases from suppliers and in other areas. So that the manifestation of that probably has yet to complete. But certainly, I think looking at the where the economy is going in the medium term, I think if we can keep a lid on things and we start to see interest rates come down, of course, what that will mean is that the banks and financial institutions that have been earning great sums from funds on deposit won't be earning quite the same interest amount of interest that they were. So that's a factor that we may see some fallout in financial stocks, particularly the banking sector. But certainly, I think that'll be good news for the UK economy as a whole. So in the short term, that's the only immediate fallout I could see occurring from any reduction in interest rates, if and when they start.
Yes, indeed. I mean, so looking at what's happening out there in the economy at the moment, we're soldiering through, so to say. You know, it's not particularly great out there, but it's not as bad as people had forecast. I think that's being represented not really in the FTSE 100, but in the FTSE 250, which is held up. We've seen a bit of a tick higher recently, but there is some catching up to be done there from the FTSE 250. That's going to be interesting to see how that pans out for the rest of this year. So we're going to move on now, Alan, and discuss the first company up today, which is Rolls-Royce. They released their trading statement for the first quarter yesterday. We saw a bit of a dip in Rolls-Royce shares yesterday. So what was behind that move, Alan?
Well, it's a pretty good set of results. I mean, shares are actually up again today, but as we were saying earlier, of course, they did dip off yesterday. And I think it's a simple case of buy the rumor, sell the news. And of course, a lot of investors and institutional investors will have held on and maybe taken some money off the table, but they're maybe looking forward looking at the fact that the guidance remains unchanged, which to my mind, given the uncertain macro picture, that's a good thing. But it was nonetheless, we saw that dip. But of course, shares are still trading close to year high so far of 160p. Trading, we're back up today to just below 150p, 149.15 as we're recording this. But it was a really good update overall from the group. So of course, you've got the civil aerospace arm, which of course you've got those eponymous huge great engines that are underneath the wings of most of the airliners that fly around the world. Rolls-Royce expect large engine flying hours they've recovered to 83% of 2019 levels, and they expect that figure to remain between 80 and 90% across the full year. So of course, the after sales and servicing of those motors is a huge source of income to Rolls-Royce. On the defence front, Rolls-Royce has been awarded key contracts with to provide nuclear reactors for submarines, for nuclear power submarines, and also to provide motors for the next generation, or engines for the next generation of US Army helicopters. And in power, of course, aftermarket services have seen high demand, and Rolls is very much banking on power systems to drive margins higher, and of course contribute substantially to the overall performance of the group. So underlying profits between 800 million and 1 billion are expected on the year. Free cash flow between 600 to 800 million, and very much weighted to the second half of the year. So yeah, shares were off 2.6%, but really they've recovered that already this morning. And I think overall, if you're an investor in Rolls, that's a pretty good outlook. And I'm sure, given the macro backdrop, we can probably expect the company to continue to win further contracts as the year progresses. So if I'm a holder of Rolls-Royce shares, I think I would continue to hold. But of course, there are some issues and concerns over the balance sheet. And the fact, of course, is that Rolls-Royce doesn't pay a dividend at the moment. So if the stock isn't paying a dividend per se, you would then look for the opportunities for capital growth. And I mean, the opportunities are limited at the moment. So so perhaps if the shares do pop a bit higher, you might want to take some money off the table and bank some profits. But I think nonetheless, you know, the outlook for roles and the visibility for Rolls Royce is reasonably good. And I think, of course, if they did reintroduce a dividend, it would change the picture and the investor appetite substantially.
So it's quite interesting to pick up on the travel element there of Rolls Royce. Of course, they're seeing the flying hours move back. I think it's 83% of what it was before the pandemic. And you know, looking at Rolls Royce shares this year, they're up about 50%. And if you look across the travel industry, if you look at IAG, they're up significantly near the highs. EasyJet are up. So it looks as though investors are expecting a strong summer for the travel industry. I mean, there was some news out very recently that the Dubai Hotel Atlantis was preparing for a boom in travel and investing in four new hotels across the world. But just looking at the share prices of the travel sector and the travel ones listed here in London in the FTSE 350, do you think to some extent that this good news that we could see in the summer from a strong summer of people traveling and you know, getting back out on holiday is to some extent already priced in?
Yeah, I think it probably is priced in because of course, you know, we've had this relief rally, you know, post-COVID relief rally, and but there are still a number of other factors. But I think there's a lot of pent-up demand. I think, you know, a lot of money hasn't been spent on leisure. And, of course, that's gone into, you know, during the lockdown, of course, gone into DIY and household repairs. So, but there's still, you know, people are dying to get away on holiday. So I'd expect that demand to continue, and probably, you know, we'll see things return to a slightly more normal pattern next year. So, is there much more upside to come? We've probably seen the best of it, I would say. But you know, certainly back to Rolls, I think if Rolls do reintroduce that dividend, then there's a whole new reason for investors to own the shares again.
Indeed, indeed. Perfect. So moving on now, Alan, we're going to look at a new issue, Golden Metal Resources. They came to market this week, I believe. Be good to get a breakdown of the company and how the IPO went.
Well, it's been a very successful IPO, John. I mean, the shares are currently trading at just on the IPO price, so not a great deal of action, really. But of course, it listed on Wednesday, raised 1.98 million and issued at a placing price of 8.5p, we came to market with a valuation of 7.1 million. And of course, key with this is the fact that the package of assets owned by Golden Metal Resources were spun out of Power Metal Resources. And logically, you can see absolutely why, because the entire focus of the company is in Nevada, within the Walker Lane Gold Belt in Nevada, a package of projects there. The flagship project is, of course, the Pilot Mountain project, and this is a project that has a JORC compliant resource already, 12.5 million tons at 0.27% tungsten. Interesting to note comments from the chief executive Oliver Friesen that at various events they have seen interest from US government delegates in the tungsten asset, because of course there are no tungsten mines per se in the US. So if Pilot Mountain has the potential to develop into that first in-house tungsten resource in the US, that will be hugely important, given of course its applications both in defense and technology. So so that's really interesting. That's the flagship project. Pilot Mountain also has credits for copper, silver, and zinc as well. That's also very important. But I interviewed Oliver Friesen, the chief executive, last year, and we were talking about all the projects. And he was also really excited about the other three assets within the company, particularly Golcon the Summit, which he believed a silver and gold project, which is cited at the conference of the Getchell and Battle Mountain geologists. And of course, Battle Mountain is a very famous gold mine there in Nevada. This is all the projects are also cited within an area called the Walker Lane Gold Belt, which is prolific in terms of production over the years. Nevada is also a very mining-friendly state as well, so So it's a very mature asset or mature collection of assets in that regard. Also has either side of the Pilot Mountain project, the Garfield property, which is a copper and gold project, and the Stonewall property, which is also silver and gold project, and that is sited to the south, to the southeast of Pilot Mountain. So Oliver and his team have come to market. There some great pictures floating around the internet of when the bell was rung at the London Stock Exchange on Wednesday morning. A collection of familiar faces there to those following the company. The company's promised an absolute avalanche of news flow in the coming weeks and months. So, you know, we're at a really exciting juncture with this company, an awful lot to happen. And as I say, I think the Pilot Mountain project, you know, investors will be looking for developments there just to see, you know, how much potential there is for Pilot Mountain to become a key tungsten producing asset for the USA.
Indeed. And we watch with interest how those projects progress going forward. And I'm sure one that we discuss on the podcast in the future. So we're going to finish off now, Alan, with a company here, TruSpy. Now, just looking here at the charts, it's had a tough time recently and messy to some extent. Is there light at the end of the tunnel for this company?
Well, there is, and I have taken, well, I've, should we say, been subject to some trolling on Telegram in the past week or so from things I've said about TruSpine, because clearly the people that have decided to send me messages on Telegram are very much, they're not up to speed with developments in the company, and very much believe that the board should be removed. I'm going to focus on what the company does first of all, and then I'm going to talk about the developments, because I did meet and I did meet with the chief executive Lawrence Scott Lawrence Strauss yesterday, and we discussed developments. So TruSpine has it's engaged in the medical device field with spinal stabilization devices, and the spinal devices market is absolutely huge, estimated to be well over $10 billion per annum, and expected to grow at a compound average growth rate of some 3% all the way through to 2026. And TruSpine have three key patented devices in this field: the Servilock screw-free spinal stabilization system that minimizes risk of vertebral injury. There's the laminoplasty system, which it's minimally invasive in application, basically frees up and expands the bony spinal canal, which relieves pressure on the spinal cord, which of course can lead to back pain. And then also the FasciLock system, which focuses on the lumbar and lower thoracic vertebrae, and again, it's a series of mechanical screws and attachments that basically provide stabilization and support. So it's a huge market. The company is currently seeking US FDA approval, but as you rightly pointed out, John, there is a considerable amount of disruption within the company at the moment due to the recent board changes. But the board changes were brought about because Lawrence Strauss pointed out to me that the previous administration had done very little, if nothing, to progress the FDA application, also to progress the business as a whole. And they had squandered the cash assets that were within the company. So that's the majority of that board were removed. Lawrence Strauss came in. He's dramatically cut costs already in the few weeks he's been with the company. But a bunch of shareholders have put in a requisition notice for a general meeting, which will now be held at the end of May. And this is to now remove Norman Lott, Nick Patel, Annabel Schild, and Lawrence Strauss as directors. Now, Annabel Schild is a long-standing director of the company. Nick Patel is a highly regarded surgeon and neurosurgeon, and is a non-exec director with the company. He's an honorary senior clinical lecturer at the Institute of Clinical Neurosciences at the University of Bristol, and also a non-exec director, Dr. Tim Evans, a former apothecary to Her Majesty the Queen, and that's back in the early noughties. Annabel Shield, a long-standing entrepreneur and investor, and she recently provided the company with an additional loan to keep the company going during this interim period while it resolved these issues with the general meeting and the requisition meeting. Also the group chief financial officer, Norman Lott, is an experienced chief finance officer, held multiple roles on AIM-listed companies over the past few years. But Lawrence Strauss in particular is a real entrepreneur, and he saw very quickly the opportunities here. He was brought in on the recommendation of Annabel Shields. So they're very, very much working together as a board and as a team to resolve this issue. But nonetheless, these directors have petitioned for the removal of the board. That will be resolved on the at the end of May, and then the company can move forward. They're progressing with the FDA application. One of the key issues that within TruSpine is the ownership of the IP, because the IP was invented by an American gentleman called Frank Boehm. He is the inventor. He sold the IP to TruSpine some years ago, and the IP is now absolutely and well and truly held by TruSpine PLC. That's irrefutable, and that is a fact, and the company can take that IP forward, and it owns the IP outright. So it's very important that investors understand that. So, as I say, to sum up, John, we're in this transitionary period. Obviously, the shenanigans have had that impact on the share price. We're now trading it at a penny, which gives the company a market cap of just over a million. But in this marketplace and with these products, the company has, with US FDA approval, an opportunity to be worth many multiples of that. So from the end of May onwards, it's going to be a very interesting time for investors and shareholders in TruSpine.
Thank you very much. An interesting summary there, Alan. Of course, not a company for the faint of heart. So just to recap on the companies that we discussed today, first up was Rolls-Royce with a ticker of RR. It was then Golden Metal Resources with a ticker of GMET. And we finished off there with TruSpine with a ticker of TSP. Alan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, John.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Bye-bye. This podcast was presented by Oanda, TradingView's most popular broker. Trade with Oanda and get 1 year subscription to TradingView Pro. 76.6% of retail investor accounts lose money when trading CFDs with this provider. You should consider whether you understand how CFDs work and whether you can afford to take the high risk of losing your money.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.